Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and I'm joined by admissions expert Alex Brown. Alex, how are things going?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So today we're going to do a special episode of the podcast that is all about a new type of kind of MBA offering or a new admissions method, I guess you could say, because it's all about deferred enrollment MBA offerings. So what on earth are these things? Do you think you could explain just for our listeners who don't have never heard of a deferred enrollment offering from an MBA program?
Sure. I mean, you qualified as a new type of process. I would say it's evolving. It's reasonably new. More and more schools are doing it. But basically, it's an offering for seniors at university to apply directly to top-tier MBA programs, with the proviso that in most cases, they will then defer that admissions for a couple of years in order to get some professional experience to then start their MBA program. So in a general sense, that's what a deferred MBA program is all about.
Yeah, and that's a good point because some schools have been doing this for quite some time, but it seems like in the last year or two, there's been a flurry of newer, new programs kind of joining the mix, new institutions joining the mix. And I know most people think of, back when you and I were at Wharton, there was something called a submatriculation program, which was a very narrow thing where if you were a junior as an undergraduate business student at Wharton, you could apply and get into Wharton's MBA program and do both undergrad and grad in 5 years, but with no work experience other than your summer internships. But what's different now, and I think HBS is probably one of the leaders in that they introduced several years ago a program called 2+2, where, as you say, you apply when you're like a senior in college, you get an offer to join HBS, but you've got to go work for at least 2 years and I think up to four. And they do some things along the way with you to help curate that work experience and meet with you periodically so that by the time you join their MBA program, you're ready for it. So those are a couple of the programs. I know that Wharton has since, they still do their submatriculation program for Penn undergrads, but they've moved on to having a more traditional deferred enrollment where anyone who's a senior in a university can apply and defer the admission for a couple of years. Most of these schools, it seems, are saying 2 to 5 years is sort of the amount of work experience that they would want folks to have. There's one exception. It's a program that Yale has, which is called Silver Scholars, which I don't know if you want to talk about that one at all. It's kind of unique.
Yeah, it's different in as much as my understanding, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Graham, but the Silver Scholars folks would go directly into the Yale MBA program upon graduation for the first year, then do a year's internship to gain that professional experience, as it were, and then return to Yale for the sort of the elective program, the final year of their MBA program.
Right. So, and just so our listeners can kind of have a sense of where this is all going, I think what we want to do with this episode is give you, some of the background on what these programs are and who's offering them, which we've started to do. But we also want to talk about why are schools doing this? Why would you as an applicant be interested? And then most importantly, how can you get in? What's the right admissions strategy? What do you need to be thinking about as you apply to these programs? And I think we'll also touch on, Alex, if you're willing, kind of what do you do if you don't get in? Because that's a problem too, because these are really competitive. So to kick that off, let's talk a little bit about, I'll just run off the list of schools that are, kind of top MBA programs that are offering this. So we've mentioned Harvard, Wharton, Stanford has this type of a program. Columbia has recently introduced a deferred enrollment program, Kellogg, Chicago, MIT Sloan, Darden, Yale SOM, and Berkeley. And I do want to put a footnote on the Berkeley Haas program because theirs is only open to members of the Berkeley kind of undergraduate community and maybe the graduate community as well. But you have to be a Berkeley community member to apply for it. And I think that's just because it's new and I believe they're going to open it up to the wider pool, after they kind of trial it with their own community. So those are the schools that we're kind of focused on here at Clear Admit. Do you have any idea, why do you think schools are doing this? Because it used to be the case that schools had no interest, really, in talking to kind of undergraduates. They wanted people, to go out, get some seasoning, some real work experience, and to show up after they've had anywhere from 2 to 4 to 5, even beyond, years of experience. So what do you think is driving this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm absolutely convinced that the reason for this is simply when you're a senior in college, you have choices. You can go directly to work, or you could go to law school or medical school or other sort of graduate programs. But traditionally, MBA program says, no, we're not interested in talking to you. We're going to wait 3 or 4 or 5 years, and then we want you to talk to us. And quite frankly, I think that turned some people away that wanted some more certainty in terms of their graduate studies at the time they're leaving college. And, you know, these MBA programs have started to realize, you know, the apples are starting to shrink. One of our main competitors is the law school or is the medical school and these other graduate degree programs. So what can we do to try to stem that flow away from business school to these other graduate degree programs? So I think, quite frankly, Graham, and you can comment on this yourself, but I think that's the reason why they do this.
Yeah, I think it's all about expanding the applicant pool. And I agree. I mean, business schools were for a long time at a disadvantage, right? Because they arrive kind of late to the party. And a lot of those really bright, talented young folks have headed off to do like a master's in biotech, or they've already done pursuing a law degree or medical school. And so I think some of this is about grabbing candidates who maybe weren't thinking about business school. And I will say, I know that a lot of the top MBA programs have traditionally gone to some undergraduate institutions to kind of try to plant the seed about management education. But I think that's hard. I mean, it's hard to do when you know, it's kind of like, hey, we have this really cool program, but by the way, you can't apply. Not yet. You know, come to us in like 4 years, you know.
Right. It's like, yeah, we're really excited to have you, but please don't call us for 3 or 4 years. So, I mean, this is the reason for these programs. And it's very smart to do this, I think. It's sort of, it widens the pipeline a little bit for the schools. And on the flip side, for the students, it gives them more certainty. They, you know, if they really want to go to do an MBA program and they know that as an undergrad, this is definitely a very good opportunity to pursue, I think.
Yeah. And so I'll say one more thing. I think, as you said, we're in a kind of time of shrinking, a kind of shrinking applicant pool for the U.S. schools. And so I think some of the rush to everyone to get into this game is they're thinking, well, are there other ways to draw in candidates? And so this gives them some assurances with respect to their pipeline. And so I think that helps, too. And then another thing is, I do feel like, and some of the research that we've done, you know, with the Clear Admit audience and projects we've done with universities suggest that there are populations in the kind of applicant pool or potential, you know, kind of prospect pool for whom getting a degree, one of the things that happens when you do this is you can get the degree faster, right? Because, I mean, look at the Yale program, for example. I mean, you know, you start at 22, you're done and have an MBA at age 25, which is, before many people would even be applying to business school. And even with some of the other programs like Columbia, you know, you could go and work for 2 years, come back, you're done by like 26, right? So that's a really different trajectory than finishing your MBA when you're 28 or 29. And they found, some of the research that we've done has found that, you know, there are candidates, sometimes candidates from socioeconomically challenging backgrounds who they want to get through this faster to really, you know, enhance earning power at an earlier stage in their career. Maybe they're supporting, you know, parents or whoever it might be. And for women as well, this can resonate in terms of getting out there, getting the MBA and getting your career off to the races before you have to start to think about things like family and things that might take you out of the workforce potentially for a brief period of time. So, yeah, so there are a lot of reasons.
Yeah, to that point, I don't think it's you know, it's quite obvious. Other graduate degree programs have you know, more women than men in their programs, above 50%, I believe, whereas MBA programs have generally struggled in that regard. So this may be a way to sort of try to rebalance that issue.
So let's talk just briefly about why applicants would like this. I mean, you seemed to imply a moment ago that some of it's about getting, like, you know, it's almost like assurances that they've got somewhere to go. But are there other things that you think might be appealing?
I mean, frankly, though, Graham, if you know you're going to Harvard in 2 years' time, that's great for potentially your level of risk tolerance in terms of what career you're going to pursue, the things that you can do during that career, knowing you're going to Harvard. Maybe your employer, knowing that you're going to Harvard, can do some interesting and creative things with you along the way, and so on and so forth. So this opens up a lot of possibilities, I think. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's just human nature to want some degree of understanding of where your path forward is going. And obviously, in a more traditional career sense, you know, people graduate from, you know, top undergraduate schools, work for 2 or 3 years in a top management consulting firm or investment bank or whatever it is, tech firm now, then to go back to their MBA. But there's still some uncertainty in that path, whether they get to pursue an MBA at their chosen school. This creates a better degree of certainty for these types of candidates, I think. So I can't see a downside of it in that regard.
Yeah, so it's, I think I would say, yeah, they get the assurance, as you say, they can take more risks. They know they've got this sort of light at the end of the tunnel waiting for them. And it's a faster path, right, to graduating, as we just mentioned earlier. I also wonder if it helps with landing that post-college job. So if you're able to say to an employer, look, I'm an HBS 2 plus 2, or I'm, you know, I've been admitted to Columbia or Kellogg's deferred MBA enrollment, you know, I'm a superstar. I mean, you wouldn't say it that way, but you're basically, it's a stamp of approval from a top academic institution. And I would think most of these recruiters would say, wow, great, you know, because they know they're going to lose these kids anyway after a couple of years. So they're, you know, it's no different. It's just that they know that person has a place to land. And yeah, I wonder, do you think these kids then they take less, do they take less crap from their bosses because they're kind of like, because they're, you know, they got something lined up, but I don't know if there's a downside.
I just think it just gives you a bit more freedom in all that regard. And then on the flip side, don't be worried about being locked into this offer, because just like, you know, other more traditional MBA program admissions offers, at the end of the day, you can turn it down and go elsewhere. You can choose a different MBA, or you can choose not to pursue an MBA. I mean, obviously, the schools that make these offers want you to come to their programs and will try to cultivate that relationship over the couple of years that you're in your career before you're joining the MBA. So they might have some mentorship programs and various other things to try to increase that engagement to ensure that you do attend their program. But you're not locked in, and they will anticipate some kind of yield issues as they sort of build these classes.
Yeah, and I mean, they will have deposits and things, but it's not, yeah, you're absolutely right. Just like any other, you know, acceptance letter, and you have time. And so the last thing I was going to say about this is, I think this would be a way to get mom and dad off your back. If you have the kind of parents who, you know, if you have the kind of parents who are kind of like, wait, you're graduating from university and you're just going to go work? Like, are you going to go back to graduate school? And you could say, oh, yeah, eventually I'll get an MBA. And they'd say, yeah, sure. I'll believe that when I see it. Because once you start to work, you're not going to go back. Or so this is a nice way to be able to say, look, I know you're, maybe there's some unease about me just leaving and heading into the real world. But look, I have this slip of paper that tells me I have an offer to go to, you know, MIT Sloan for an MBA. And I have 2 to 5 years to go and do that. And so I think on some levels, you know, if you have the kind of parents who are, you know, helicopter parents or snowplow parents or whatever you want to call them, this is a great way to, you know, kind of keep them off your back too. And I guess one other thing is, if you apply to business school while you're still in university, you're probably going to be better at taking standardized tests and maybe even doing some of the writing and things that you would do for an application, because you're going to be in the throes of those types of, you know, exercises as a student in the first place. So there's some benefit to that. We do hear some MBA applicants who wait until they've been working for 5 years saying, oh my gosh, you know, I've got to revisit all this stuff from my college days to get ready for a test, and I haven't been writing essays. And so there's some benefits, I think, to applying as a younger candidate. So let's move on and talk a little bit about how you can get in to one of these programs, because as we know, the acceptance rates are quite low for, you know, I mean, obviously some of it's because if you look at that list of schools that are offering these deferred enrollments, it's a really prestigious list of schools, you know, Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, Columbia, the list goes on, right? These are great programs. So what does someone have to do to get in? I mean, it seems like the bar is pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want anyone to think this is an easy way to get into a top-tier MBA program by any means. This is not an easy thing to accomplish. You know, MBA programs, admissions officers will have less data to look at in terms of determining a candidate's overall quality. So what data they do have to look at, they're going to really scrutinize and set the bar pretty high, I have to think, right? So, you know, an obvious point would be your undergraduate GPA. you need to make sure that you're a very good student. So look at the undergraduate GPA averages of these top schools, and they're probably 3.6, 3.7 or something like that. I mean, you've got to be aiming at least for that, I would think. And certainly over the last couple of years, you've got to have been doing super well. Combined with that, you've got to have a very good test score. So, Graham, you mentioned taking the test scores now. Again, look at the school averages and anticipate you're probably going to have to beat those averages or at least come very close to them. So that combination of GPA and GMAT is going to have to be very high. Why is that? Because, you know, again, you don't have that professional work experience post-MBA to sort of show your continued development, your leadership, and so on and so forth. What you do have in that regard is going to be your extracurricular activities whilst you're in school. So, you know, these programs are going to be looking for leaders on campus, those that have really made an impression and done some interesting things during their time in as an undergraduate. So really look to make sure that you've taken on some of those leadership challenges, made an impact, had some form of impact during your time as an undergraduate. And then the one sort of professional aspect that you can point to is what do you do during your summer breaks, your internship programs and so forth. And hopefully, you know, candidates have a chance of maybe a couple of internships ahead of these sorts of applications you know, showing, again, that they've taken on some challenging internships to the extent that they can, what they've learned from them, and so on and so forth. So the challenge is you don't have that professional experience to showcase your leadership and other attributes that schools look for, like impact and so on and so forth. So to compensate that, you've really got to deliver on these other aspects, I think, Graham.
Which elite MBA program had graduates ranked number one in salary in 2019? Columbia Business School. With a new dean, new vision, and new campus opening in 2021, you can join the only Ivy League business school in New York City, the very center of business. Explore the new deferred enrollment program where you can apply now for free as an undergraduate, then begin your MBA in 2 to 5 years. Learn more at columbia.business/deferred. Yeah, I think great point that it's not by no means a backdoor into these types of institutions. And I, you know, some of these programs are very new, so there's not a lot of stats on them. You know, some have just literally been introduced this season. But a program like HBS 2+2, you know, the median GMAT was 730, the average GPA was 3.79, right? So these are pretty big numbers, and I think the acceptance rate was less than 10%. And, you know, they had like 1,400 applicants and they only end up, you know, getting about 115 kids that are going to matriculate. So it's really competitive. I absolutely agree. I was speaking with the director of admissions at Columbia for a podcast we recorded, just a Q&A with Michael Robinson over at CBS. And, you know, they have a program and he mentioned that, you know, it's for someone who's kind of got their act together and is a bit of a superstar, right? I mean, you've got to be, because, you know, he pointed out there are a lot of people who are in college, don't really know what they want to do. And they actually need those couple of years to go out and work and figure out their career plan and bolster their candidacy. And he also talked about, it's like you said, this is a really predictive exercise in the sense that they don't have a lot of data. So they have to kind of really predict like, well, who's going to really be the next group of great leaders and how do we get them into the program? And, you know, they've limited data on which to kind of base that. And so I think to the extent that you as a candidate can show that whether it's via internships or on-campus activities that you've had leadership and even managerial kind of experience, that'll go a long way. But I think, if you think of a candidate as having these sort of like, typically we talk about these different pillars to a candidacy, you know, there's academics, there's kind of experience and leadership, there's outside interests and activities, and then there's maybe career plan and, you know, where are they headed. If you look at those, I would say academics, it's like, as you say, they've got to hit a home run. They need to have a great GPA, great GMAT score, or GRE, and that sort of puts them in play. And then they need to, I would argue, bring together internships and campus activities. And so there's kind of a blending of your extracurriculars and your sort of quote work experiences in order to demonstrate the leadership aptitude. And then finally, they need to have, as we say, like a good head on their shoulders. I don't think the school is expecting the applicants to know exactly what they're going to do, right? I mean, it's, you know, these folks are like 20, 21 years old. And so predicting the future is really tough with respect to your career path. But I think having a plan is important. And I know we tell the full-time kind of traditional MBA applicants, oh, you know, name three employers that you're going to work for post-MBA, and then what's your midterm and long-term goal, or, you know, get really specific. I think that might be a little different for this crowd. What's your take on that? Like, how specific do the goals need to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think in some cases the goals are going to be reasonably specific, especially in the short term. But what we're talking about is goals directly coming straight out of undergrad rather than goals coming directly straight after the MBA. So a number of these folks must know where they're going after their senior year. And that sort of helps sort of dot the I's and cross the T's in terms of their career path. So that would be very good. But yeah, I think in general, you know, schools are going to be looking for people with you know, who are pretty deliberate decision makers and have some sense of where they're going. But I don't think it, you know, they can really sort of predict 10, 15 years out necessarily where they should be. I do think, however, that they need to be ambitious, the sorts of people that are ambitious in this. But the idea is also they're fundamentally seeking out potential superstars. They're taking a bit of a risk, schools, admitting these types of folks because they lack some of that data. So to sort of counterbalance that risk, they're really looking for potential superstars. So what is it that you've done in your college career, as it were, that really shows that you are a potential superstar? And again, looking at internships, looking at your leadership on campus, whilst combined with a very strong GPA, strong test scores, and so on and so forth. Graham, about recommendations, that's kind of an interesting question, I think, because, again, before this podcast, I did go through and look at, you know, they're all looking for two letters of recommendation. Maybe one of them's only looking for one. You know, in the regular MBA admissions process, we are very firm that you need to get professional recommendations from your career. And only very unusual cases would you seek a recommendation from a faculty. This is going to be a little bit different, I think, because clearly the faculty that you might have done some work with and so on and so forth is going to know you a little bit better than you know, if you've only done a couple of short internships. So where would you imagine that these recommendations should come from, Graham?
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, the good news is that unlike the sort of traditional process, these deferred enrollment program offerings allow you to get an academic recommendation or someone, you know, from school. So I think there's more flexibility. And I guess I would just say that ideally there's, you know, the candidates considering these programs have someone that has both taught them. Maybe it's their, you know, maybe it's their advisor in the department that they're majoring in. So someone that's seen them in class, but also is advising them. And ideally even knows a bit about that person's campus activities, you know, if they're a student leader, because it would be great. You know, I think this is true. Most people in university can think about a faculty member or someone, you know, at the university who knows, you know, more than just kind of, okay, these are the grades the person has received, you know. So I think, yeah, to the extent that you have a mentor, a professor that's kind of a mentor or advisor, that's the go-to. Obviously, if you've done a couple of summers in a row at a company and have had a really interesting internship experience, or even a single summer where you had a lot of impact, then that's fine too. And I think most candidates, it's going to probably be one and one for those schools that require two letters. I think it would be a mistake to just have two like strictly academic reference letters. I think ideally, whether the person's a professor or not, you know, if they are a professor, they need to be able to speak to more than just your in-class performance. You know, so demonstrating some familiarity with the trajectory you're on or your goals and what you've done on campus will be really important.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Graham, the recommendations aren't there to reinforce that you're smart. I mean, we've got transcripts, we've got various other things that are going to tell the admissions committee that you're a smart candidate. You've got the GPA, you've got the test scores and stuff. So, I mean, you're really going to be seeking some other attributes that you want your recommenders to really focus on to some extent, right? So campus activities, if you've been a leader on campus, then the person that you worked with on the faculty you're executing on that leadership is probably a good source for a recommendation in this regard. And making sure that your recommendations are substantial. So it's not a question of, you know, answering, you know, if there's three or four set questions for recommendation, it's not a question of the recommender, you know, writing a couple of sentences saying, yeah, this guy's terrific in teamwork. They've got to back it up with examples that explain why this person's a great team player or whatever the specific questions are. So make sure that's clear, because that might not be as clear with other things that you're seeking at this stage of your career.
And that's actually a good carryover from even the traditional admissions process, where we recommend that you deliver information to your recommenders that can be of use as they write their letters. And that means, you know, just reminding them of like some of the things you do on campus that they've, you know, ideally overseen or witnessed you're accomplishing, but just to jog their memory, because, you know, faculty members are busy folks, just as, I mean, as a regular boss is busy, you know, just reminding them, oh yeah, we worked on this, and this, because you want them to have a list of anecdotes that they could maybe go to and share.
And faculty members are writing a lot of recommendations, but they're often in different arenas that aren't looking for the level of substance that I would argue that the MBA admissions committees are looking for.
Absolutely.
So that's
very good point.
This is, and it really also reflects in your essay writing, in the essay writing for the schools, making sure that it's all about show, don't tell. So if you're making a point, back it up with an example that really reinforces why, again, either you're a good leader or, again, however you're addressing a particular essay prompt or whatever it might be.
Yeah. And so there are two more things that I wanted to say about this, you know, while we're talking about my kind of admission strategy and how do you as a college student get into one of these top deferred enrollment offerings from an MBA program. The first is that an admissions officer I spoke with from one of these programs told me that they really look to see, like, what's the impact that you have had on the institutions or organizations that you have been a part of. So, you know, whether that's a campus club or, you know, your university at large or, you know, the sort of summer jobs you had, they just are looking for impact, you know, and they know that you're not going to be a CEO or something at this age, you know, but they just want to see that you're leaving places better off than you joined them in some way, you know, that you're kind of leaving your mark. So that's important. And the other thing I thought would be important for us to talk about is, what are some things that candidates shouldn't do? So I personally think that, you know, when you're a young candidate to business school, and this applies whether you've got, you know, a year of experience or two, or you're applying as an undergraduate or something for these deferred programs, like, what are the telltale signs? You know, I think there are several things that people need to sort of avoid. So do you have any thoughts on that? I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but I have some ideas too. But is there anything that you can think of that candidates do that sort of suggests, you know, a lack of that they're, you know, going to be at a disadvantage?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky, isn't it? Because clearly the candidates are 20, 21 years old. So my immediate and obvious answer would be, you know, demonstrating a relative lack of maturity as you're competing with peers that are 25, 26 when they apply. But, you know, again, I think the type of quality of person that should be applying for these programs is generally relatively mature in of themselves, and they recognize this stuff. So, you know, clearly in admissions, we are less about the I and more about the team and, you know, various things like that. So, you know, when you talk about your accomplishments in your essays and your impact, you're talking about how you accomplished this with whomever it was accomplished with, rather than, oh, I went in, I figured it all out for everybody, and now they're in great shape because I'm brilliant. I mean, that's just not going to resonate with you know, readers of these applications. So just sort of general maturity tips would be important, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I can think of a handful of just small things. So one would be, First of all, I agree. You got to come across as mature. I know that the candidates are being evaluated largely against, you know, the other kind of deferred enrollment candidates. So the admissions team knows these are younger folk, but I still think, as you say, it would go miles and miles if you can demonstrate a high level of maturity. I think, for example, talking about mom and dad in your applications would be a real no-no in my view. Obviously, if you know if dad was dying of cancer and you got a job to help pay for treatment, or you did, you know, obviously there are exceptions, right? But generally speaking, if it's sort of like, well, I've always wanted to do this because my mom, you know, inspired me to, you know, to be an astronaut or whatever it's, you know, like whatever it's going to be, you want to be able to somehow suggest a certain level of independence. And so bringing up mom and dad could be dangerous territory.
Unless, of course, that candidate's mother was, in fact, an astronaut.
Yes, yes. Okay, fair enough. But I'm saying you don't want it to seem like mom and, like, oh, for example, I've wanted to join the, you know, Kellogg Deferred Enrollment Program ever since my mom and dad gave me the brochure and told me I should apply, you know. So you got to be careful about stuff like that. The other thing I think that happens with younger candidates is the inability to demonstrate that you've failed and learned from it, or, you know, to sort of show a certain level of humility and understanding that, because sometimes in interviews or in application materials, schools may ask, they may go there and say, tell us about a time that you didn't hit the mark or failed. And I think, you know, sometimes younger candidates especially might have a tendency to say, that time I got a 99 out of 100 instead of 100 out of 100, I was so disappointed because that one point I really should have known, and, you know, whatever it is, right? So being careful to just, yeah, be humble and know that you've learned from your failures. And the last thing I was going to say is, you know, and then maybe it's related, is don't throw anybody under the bus, as they say, you know, when you're talking about a challenge or a challenging team you were a part of, or, you know, something that happened that was difficult for you. You have to be careful to make sure that you're not just saying, well, if it weren't for these three bozos on my team project, we would have done much better. And that was really difficult to stoop to their level in getting this project done, you know, so something like that. So you have to be careful about things like that.
Now, I think those are very good points, actually, Graham, and we would have been remiss not to bring them up. I also think, fundamentally, be likable, you know, and they're related to what you've just said. You don't throw people under the bus. You don't come across as this person that, you know, gets annoyed over the silliest little thing. You know, you want to show that you're a likable person as well as a successful person with high impact. That would be a very good combination, I think.
And I guess the last thing I would say is I think personally that, you know, they're looking for go-getters, right? They're looking for, as we say, superstars, people with great numbers. But I also think, you know, maturity is really important. And they also, they need to feel like your life isn't just sort of a script, you know, that you're just following in a kind of blind robotic way. Like, I think, you know, you want to be human and you don't want to be sort of like, you know, sometimes you read about these kids that went to college at age 12 and, you know, it's sort of this like, what's driving that? And you know, is this person just rushing to kind of get through life, or is there some real sincerity? So I think, yeah, you don't want to sound too, just like sincerity is important as well. So let's talk, just to wrap things up, I was curious if you had any thoughts about what happens if you don't get in. Because, you know, we read out some stats earlier that suggest that most people, you know, aren't going to get into these top programs as college kids, and they may have to, you know, come up with a plan B. So what's your advice there?
Yeah, and it's not very good, is it? You're graduating college, you've been very successful throughout your career, you know, your short life to date, and all of a sudden a top school says no, and you're like, wow, that's awful. I'm not used to rejection at this point in my life. But I mean, the reality is, if you come back 3 or 4 years later and you apply as a regular MBA student, there is no stigma attached to someone that tried to apply early and was unsuccessful. And in fact, there's a lot of data that suggests that reapplicants are generally more successful in the MBA admissions process than first-time applicants. And I would speculate, and I underline speculate maybe twice, that the reason, and Harvard generally brings out a statistic each year that 10%, or I forget what percent, but a significant percentage of its class are reapplicants each year. And I would speculate that a portion of that number is because of their 2+2 program. But I don't know that, Graham, so I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, no, I think it's fair. I mean, I would say, if anything, you know, you've got an early indicator in your on your resume, you know, that you were thinking about management education. And, you know, sure, if you don't get in, you're going to go work just like anyone else would have before the existence of these types of deferred enrollment anyway. And so I think, you know, it'll suggest that you'll need to buckle down, work hard and apply again as a regular candidate. I do think that if you don't get in, you shouldn't beat yourself up. As we're saying, the acceptance rates are really low for these programs because they're taking such a small cohort each year. But I do think, you know, it could be a useful bit of feedback where you can sort of analyze, well, what was it? You know, maybe you had a low test score. That's something easy to remedy in the coming years as you kind of go out there and work for a few years. You have plenty of time, you know, to retake a test. You know, or if it was just not enough leadership, that's going to be remedied by you working and pursuing extracurriculars and things in your professional life. So, yeah, I think it's great to apply to these programs. I think, obviously, as we said, there's so many advantages to knowing when you graduate college that you're going to go off to a top MBA program in a few years. But if you don't get in, you know, the vast majority of your classmates in business school are going to be in that bucket of just coming to the process as young professionals. And so, yeah.
And just to be clear, Graham, if they don't get in, they don't actually put that bit on their resume, right?
No. But I think it is something that might come out in an interview, or if they might ask you in the application, have you ever applied to the program? And you would, you know, obviously have to disclose at that point. But yeah, we wouldn't put it on the resume.
But I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for those that know that an MBA is what they want to do in the future, but want that sort of, again, some level of certainty in their path going forward. So they can take a punt now, try to get admitted, and clearly a number of folks do get admitted through these programs. Hopefully we've given some reasonably decent insight in terms of how to go about this process. But at the end of the day, I think it's a worthwhile endeavor for those folks, Graham. And obviously for business schools, they're looking for these folks, again, for the reasons we established toward the beginning of this podcast. So hopefully it works out for some of the folks that listen to this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I think is happening is schools are giving, they're getting a chance to get in front of candidates at a younger age. And you know, I think there's some candidates out there who kind of are a little suspect of management education. And so I think getting a close-up view of it, and all the, like, you know, corporate social responsibility classwork that exists, and you know, even working in nonprofit or the intersection of government and business, there are a lot of ways to get where kind of business education can be incredibly valuable. So I'm really happy that schools are at least making the pitch and have an offering that addresses this issue of whereas before they were just like last in line after law school, medical school, everyone else who had been. So I think it's great. Yeah, and hopefully the advice we provided on this episode will serve you well if you're listening and thinking about one of these programs. And yeah, just take it to heart, and best of luck to everyone looking at these different types of deferred enrollment options. And yeah, and stay tuned. We have a lot of other episodes that may be of use about just general stuff about interviewing or recommendation letters. So there are other things you can listen to, but I think this is a great starting point for anyone looking at these kind of programs.
Yeah, no doubt. Best of luck, everybody.
All right. Thanks again, Alex, for all of your insights. And yeah, best of luck to everyone looking at deferred enrollment options.